The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is our Medical Monday, and it's Prostate Health Awareness Month. We're taking a detailed look at prostate health, prostate cancer, treatment, and quality of life issues. My guests are Dr. Artie Sheldon, prostate cancer survivor with the Prostate Health Education Network. We're also going to try to get back urologist Dr. Chilladim Ahagotu, and we'll bring him back into the conversation as soon as we can. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to James. James calling from Washington, D.C. Thanks for calling, James. What's on your mind?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can.
Yeah, I would just like to know, I went and got a PSA prostate exam done last month, but what about some dietary measures I can do to prevent it? Because it's genetic. Great-granddad, father, but my father had his prostate removed 2 years ago. So what can I do as far as, like, meals?
And a lot of people are really interested in trying to attack this issue before it becomes an issue in all kinds of ways.
Yeah, to answer your question, we hope that everyone eats a healthy meal, balanced meal. We cannot specifically, think about any particular foods or so that may aggravate or, precipitate prostate cancer. But overall, just eating a good diet to avoid hypertension, diabetes is always good. We do find that there seems to be an increase in the risk for prostate cancer for people that are obese or, above their BMI. So obesity tends to seem to be a problem, with the prostate cancer. But the family history is probably more key if an individual has a positive family history of prostate cancer, such as myself. That's probably a greater indication that individual need to be monitored probably a little closer, and get a yearly PSA testing done. And it's very important for men, when they get the PSA testing done, to get it on an anniversary type of setting that they can remember when they had the PSA testing. And the individual should know what their PSA number is. It's not up to the doctor to know your number. We find that if your PSA has increased maybe 0.25 nanograms or so in a year's time, there may be a problem. In other words, if your PSA is 1 this year and next year is, let's say, it's 2, 2.5, or 3, even though it's within the normal range, the fact that it increased within a year's time, that's an indication that there may be a problem with your prostate. And so an astute physician will tell you to come in for, evaluation. But unfortunately, some doctors may wait until after it gets beyond 4 and then they ask you to come in. And then we're behind the power curve. Mm-hmm. So each individual needs to take ownership about their own and know their PSA.
James, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Drake calling from Virginia? Manassas, Virginia.
Yes, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. What's on your mind?
Well, my situation is far, I guess, more extreme than everyone is calling in so far. I have been diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer. My PSA was as high as 538.8. I was diagnosed in January. I just completed chemotherapy. The chemo that I received was I received an Allegard shot, and Taxotere is a chemo that I received. My problem I've had was I went to the urologist, and the urologist said nothing was, everything was fine. He did an examination of my prostate by his finger and told me everything was fine. And a couple of days later, I was having this extreme pain in my lower back, and I went to the emergency room. Emergency room said, hey, you know what, upon further examination, we noticed that your prostate is enlarged. You might want to get that checked out. Wow. I went to the doctor, and then I had a blood test ran and a urinalysis ran. And the urinalysis showed that I had blood in my urine, and then I also had my PSA was levels were extremely high. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm 45.
Wow.
And my problem started when I was 28. So I had been going to the doctor and going to the doctor, and they never told me anything.
Mm-hmm.
And but because I'm under 50, and that's the major problem, I'm under 50, they don't even check your PSA. So my thing would be the warning's got to get up earlier.
Dr. Shelton, if you can comment on that, because that was really going to be my, you know, that was going to be my next question. At what age should you begin to take a look at, you know, at this situation? And, you know, I mean, certainly, you know, our heart goes out to you, Drake, as you, you know, move through this process. But what age is this recommended?
Yeah, Drake, let me ask a question. You mentioned something about 28. Are you saying that you had an abnormal PSA at 28? You mentioned age 28.
Drake, are you there?
I'm sorry. I started having problems with my prostate at age 28, but they never said it was anything. They checked me for prostatitis at that time.
Prostatitis.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. They checked me for prostatitis at that time, and they said everything came back negative. So, like I said, I had no idea what a prostate was.
Let me ask a question. Do you have a family history? Anyone in your family, your father, brother, or uncle, had any problem with their prostate or prostate cancer?
My dad, he has prostate cancer.
Yes.
as we speak right now.
So to answer Mr. Fisher's question, as I mentioned before, if we have a family member, a brother or father has prostate cancer, it puts us at twice the risk of developing prostate cancer. So the fact that your father, just like in my particular case, although my PSA was within the normal range, because my uncle died from metastatic prostate cancer and my father had, you know, problems, that's why it was recommended I had a biopsy. So family history is a strong indication that if there's any concern about the prostate, that one should be watched, you know, closely. But to answer the question, if you have a family history of prostate cancer in your family, it should begin. You should get a baseline at age 40. But all African American men at 45 should, should routinely have a PSA and digital rectal exam.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Aha Gotu, you're back.
Yeah, I hope so.
Great. I'm. Thank you. Thank you.
Hopefully. Yeah, hopefully you can hear me.
Yeah, we can hear you just fine. Drake was saying that he had a digital rectal exam at the age of 45, and apparently something was missed. What specifically?
I think, and this is a great, I'm glad I was able to hear the story there. You know, prostate cancer typically is a disease of older men. Its peak age is usually in the 70s. However, there are risk factors that put people at risk of developing at an earlier age. We don't really know when it actually starts. The process starts in the prostate. But certainly, if you are having symptoms in your 20s, it is more consistent with what we call prostatitis, which is inflammation of the prostate. And that certainly can cause some of the symptoms you described, like low back pain and sexual dysfunction and pelvic pain, et cetera. Now, that being said, because of the family history and ethnic background, certainly there is a higher risk of prostate cancer, and you should, as I agree with Artie, get your first PSA check at about the age of 40. And let me just say that if someone is telling you that they don't want to do it, you need to go shop around, because there are people who will listen to you and who understand that there are risk factors that mandate doing early screening, and PSA is an important part of that.
Drake, we wish you only the very best of health, and thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. And please take care of yourself. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Herb, calling from Alexandria, Virginia. What's on your mind?
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Doing just fine.
Good. Hey. I guess I'm a little emotional here. I'm hearing all these people, and it's rough.
Mm-hmm.
I have back in 2000, I was diagnosed with colon cancer, and then 2005, I got the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and then I had the monoclonal antibody therapy for that, and then 2000, I guess just in January, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. My PSA levels were 9.3, whereas last year they were almost normal. And then in 1 year, they shot up to almost 9. And so they immediately started me on the hormone therapy. But I guess my question is, they said that I would not qualify for the seeds because of the previous two cancers, and that the radiation treatment would not be a good suggestion. And I don't know. I'm a little turned around. Mm.
Dr. Ahagotu, do you have anything that you could possibly share with her?
Sure, absolutely. And let me just start off by saying, you know, I'm sorry about the challenges that you've faced over the last few years. And I'm sure you sound like a very strong person, and I'm sure that you'll get through it successfully. Let me say that prostate cancer can occur in individuals who have had other cancers. We don't know if it's necessarily linked to those other cancers, but there is some data that suggests that there may be some genetic connections between different cancers. The treatment of prostate cancer can be affected by other treatments. So if you've gotten radiation in the past or chemotherapy or surgery, it may be difficult to offer similar types of treatment because of the higher risk of complications. The hormone therapy probably will work extremely well for you. Hormone therapy treats the entire body. It does have side effects, but it will lower that PSA, and it doesn't prevent you from exploring some other options down the line. And I do think that, you know, get a second or even third opinion until you feel comfortable that you've checked out all your options, because there may be the possibility that surgery or different kind of radiation, maybe external radiation, may be optimal for you, but probably not brachytherapy.
Okay. Herb, thank you so much, and certainly we wish you the best of health. Thank you for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to talk a bit about black men and prostate cancer. Why do we seem to see numbers higher for them as opposed to perhaps other populations? Are there any reasons? Is there any research that can pinpoint why this is a particular issue for black men? Dr. Ahagotu?
Sure. I can chime in, and then Artie, please feel free to comment as well.
Sure.
There definitely is strong data showing that men of African descent, specifically African-American men, have a higher incidence of the disease, about 60% more likely to get it. But even more importantly, when we do get prostate cancer, we have a higher risk of dying of it, about 2 to 3 times higher risk than other ethnic groups. And then finally, we also have about a 5-fold higher risk of developing advanced prostate cancer when we first diagnose it, so that the cancer that's much more difficult to cure. There's been a lot of discussion about why African-American men are at more risk. There have been a few genetic factors that have been identified, not confirmed, but we do feel that there may be a genetic basis to it. But it could also be related to environmental factors, a little bit more complicated. There could be dietary factors. And certainly, the social determinants can play a role in how cancer plays out in terms of access to health care, and other factors. So it's still kind of a work in progress trying to understand it, but there's no doubt that African-American men have a much more aggressive form of prostate cancer in general.
Dr. Shelton?
Yes. One of the things that we'll be talking about at our summit meeting this week, we'll be talking about the PSA testing. But we talk about, the other risk factors. And one of the speakers that we have is the Ken Griffey Sr., 3-time baseball all-star all-star baseball player, who will speak about his experience as a prostate cancer survivor who lost 4 uncles to the disease and whose brother was recently diagnosed, to show that there's a strong familiar, factor in prostate cancer impacting on African American men.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for that. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna talk more about quality of life issues and sexual performance and the like, and how to deal with life after prostate cancer. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. On our Medical Monday, we're talking about Prostate Health Awareness Month. I want to talk a little bit more about something that, you know, that's obviously really personal, but also of great concern. I'll start with Dr. Ahagotu. Certainly a lot of guys are concerned about, you know, sexual performance and the like after they've dealt with a bout of prostate cancer, no matter, you know, what, you know, what level. If you are able to survive it, certainly it is a concern. Dr. Ahagotu, talk to me a little bit about that particular issue. Do you lose the ability to perform sexually if your prostate is removed, or and what are the options if that is the case?
Sure. So let me just kind of do it generally, because I think that that's probably the best way to sort of think about this. So first of all, the prostate is a sexual organ. It is responsible not only for producing the secretions that occur when the man has a climax, but it's also important in terms of sexual sensitivity. It has a lot of nerves around it that contribute to that sexual experience. So if you remove it, or if you radiate it, or if you treat it in any way, it certainly could affect sexual function. So that's sort of the general, whether it's surgery or radiation or what have you. Going into the details of that risk for you particularly and that particular treatment is something you should have with your healthcare professional, so you kind of know what you're getting into as you embark on the journey. But if you do develop some degree of sexual function dysfunction, and it can be mild or it can be severe or complete, there are lots of treatments that are out there available for that, ranging from medications. We all know about Viagra, as well as other types of treatments, and even surgical treatments, surgical implants that can actually restore the male erection. So there is hope beyond the treatment. Now, that being said, you know, again, a lot of this is about expectations and understanding those expectations. So having that really good conversation going into the treatment, understanding what your risk is really going to have a huge impact on how you recover and what that journey looks like afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Shelton, you want to share anything with us?
Yes. You find that, and as you talk about the seeing the surgeon or whatever treatment you're going to have, this gets to be a major issue with the men or the male, you know, undertaking this procedure. And it's important that we, as Dr. Gotu said, that there's so many different treatments. And I tell the individual, you know, my doctor told me, he said, you know, if you're concerned about the, you know, sexual aspect, if you're dead, you don't need to worry about it. In other words, if you don't do anything, then you would not have to worry about it. But as he said, with the Viagra, you know, and also with the implant, there are certain injections that you can use. There's some suppositories. So if you have a very compassionate, competent urologist, they can help you through this ordeal and make sure you can have a satisfactory relationship. We like this. I like to think about the prostate cancer as being a couple's disease, because it really impacts on your spouse. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, really, you need to, I think when you have this treatment or whatever treatment you undertake, I think the spouse should also be involved, or, you know, to help make the decision or help you through this ordeal.
Absolutely.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Vet calling from Woodbridge, Virginia. Vet, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold. It's Betty McKenna. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. It's interesting that you all are having this topic this evening. My uncle just found out this past weekend, and I just found out Saturday, as a matter of fact, that he has prostate cancer. And he's in his 80s. My brother, who lives out of state, was diagnosed about 4 or 5 years ago. But my brother, he's reluctant to even tell us how he's doing. He keeps telling us he's doing okay. He's doing okay. My question is, you all keep mentioning something about a PSA. Is that the same as the Gleason sum, which would kind of tell you or give you an idea how advanced the cancer is?
Well, maybe I'll respond to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, go ahead, Dr. Ahagotu.
And thanks for bringing that up. It's a really good point. The Gleason score is very different from the PSA. The Gleason score is the way or the method that we measure the aggressiveness of the cancer based on the way it looks under the microscope. So when we do the biopsy, we look at the cells, And depending on the pattern of the cells, we can give it a grade anywhere from 2, which is the least aggressive, all the way up to 10, which is the most aggressive. And for your grandfather, I believe you mentioned, you know, it's really important to know what that Gleason grade is, because as we get older, especially men when they get into their 70s and 80s, it's not unusual to have prostate cancer, the kind that's not aggressive, that actually sometimes doesn't even need to be treated. And so in that situation, his Gleason grade will be a very, very important part of decision making about what should, you know, what type of treatment, or maybe not even have any treatment for him. Because it may not be that aggressive at that age group.
Yes.
Okay. So if my brother told me, if I ask him, and hopefully he should know, if he says, oh, mine is 2 or mine is 6, would that kind of give me an idea without going into details with him? Because he's so reluctant to give us information about
it. Sure. Absolutely. You know, a Gleason, anything less than a Gleason 7, so 6 and below, is typically the very non-aggressive form of prostate cancer. And in that situation, it's a very reasonable recommendation to just monitor his PSA over time, especially if it didn't start off very high. But if they told you that his Gleason was 8 or 9 or 10, then that is definitely, even at his age, a very aggressive form of prostate cancer that may need some kind of treatment.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Can we talk a little bit about some of the side effects of the treatments after you had your prostate removed, Dr. Shelton? What was the recovery period where you were able to, you know, to operate, you know, in the full spectrum of life as you had before? I'm talking about, you know, walking around, going to church, going to the grocery store, doing all of those things.
Yes. I'll make a comment. I had mine in 2003. At that time, I had what we call radical prostatectomy. And the reason I'm, you know, making a distinction, Dr. Gotu can probably address it, because now what we are using, we're just using something called robotic, you know, or the Da Vinci, where it's almost an outpatient. You know, in other words, I had to spend three to four days in the hospital. And then there's usually 10 days that you may have a catheter in, okay, because of the surgical procedure. And now doing the newer procedure called the Da Vinci or the robotic, it can be really, it's 48 hours, I think, and you're out. And also with the Da Vinci or the robotic, there's nerve sparing. So therefore, it tries to decrease the chance of you having any sexual dysfunction.
Okay.
So Dr. Gotu may want to add some other things to that.
Dr. Gotu?
Sure. Absolutely, Artie. So removal of the prostate is the radical prostatectomy. That's probably the most common way that we treat early stage prostate cancer. And we've gotten better at it over the years. And in fact, we've developed a new technology called robotic prostatectomy, where we utilize a robot that makes small incisions that allow us to dissect under a magnifying glass. And so there are two benefits. One is you have a lot less blood loss during the procedure. And two, because it's magnified, you're able to dissect the nerves a little bit more delicately off of the prostate. And so you may recover erectile function as well as continence earlier. But it really does depend on the quality of the robotic surgeon. So the robot doesn't do the procedure. It's actually still done by a human being. So you need to have a skilled surgeon that knows how to handle that robot to get a good outcome. We talked a little bit about sexual dysfunction. Just to mention incontinence, that's another unfortunate side effect that can occur. Incontinence is the leakage of urine. Mm-hmm. It usually is mild, and it usually gets better over time. But again, it depends on the quality of the surgery and other factors as well.
Okay. Thank you so much. Let's go to Linda. Linda calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Linda, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How are you? I'm calling for my fiance. He was on the phone earlier, Herb. And his question was his PSA level has went from normal to 9.7 within a year. Mm-hmm. And is that normal?
Well, it's not normal. It's abnormal, because the PSA does go up gradually over time as you get older, but not that rapidly. It usually stays in the 4 to 5 range even as you get into your 70s and 80s. So if it's actually up to 9 and over that short period of time, it definitely means something's going on, whether it's cancer or something else, you know, that requires the biopsy and the rest of the evaluation.
Okay, and that's something that he's done already. And he is being treated for prostate cancer currently.
Yeah, he mentioned he's getting hormone therapy, and hopefully that's going to put the cancer into remission, and hopefully for a very long time.
Okay.
But certainly there are other treatment options that can be offered as well, and that's why I mentioned to him that if he's still trying to figure out the best treatment, he probably should talk to a few more healthcare professionals until he feels comfortable that he's getting all the information he needs.
Okay, yeah, because right now they're saying there's nothing else that they can do.
Get a second opinion just to see what's going on. That's what I would recommend.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a second opinion.
Where are you located, please?
She's in Alexandria.
In Alexandria, Virginia, but he sees the doctor in Bowie, Maryland.
At this our conference on Thursday and Friday at the U.S. Capitol and also at the Washington Hospitals, I mean, Washington Convention Center, we have experts. I mean, if he wants to come, we have other people he can talk to, you know, that are prostate cancer survivors that have gone through different treatments.
Also, Linda, if we may offer the website as a point of information, prostatehealthed.org. That's prostatehealthed.org. There's information on all of the things that we've spoken about, including resources that certainly will help support you and your fiance as you move through this process.
And I'd like to mention that the conference is free and open to the public.
Well, then, what's the address for the conference again?
Well, the website is prostatehealthed.
Okay, and I can find the information on the website.
Mm-hmm. Prostatehealthed.org. Okay.
Okay.
Well, Linda, thank you so much, and good luck to you and your fiance. I want to thank Dr. Artie Shelton and also Dr. Chilladam Ahagotu. Thank you so much for participating in this conversation. I hope that we were able to help some of our listeners out there who are going through this very, very serious health issue. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, September 12th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, or Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.